Radio News for the 21st of January 2006. I'm Gail Thomas. Rescuers on Saturday found the bodies of two miners who disappeared after a conveyor belt caught fire deep inside a coal mine, bringing to 14 the number of West Virginia miners killed on the job in less than a month. The bodies were found in an area of the mine where rescue teams had been battling the intense blaze for more than 40 hours. Rescuers could not enter that portion of the mine until the flames had been mostly extinguished and the tunnels cooled down. "We have found the two miners we were looking for," said Doug Conaway, director of the State Office of Miners' Health, Training and Safety. "Unfortunately, we don't have a positive outcome." The miners became separated Thursday evening as their 12-member crew tried to escape a conveyor belt fire at Arakoma Coal's Alma No. 1 mine in Melville, about 60 miles southwest of Charleston. The rest of the crew and nine other miners working in a different section of the mine escaped unharmed. AP reports that Pakistan's president told a senior American official Saturday the United States must not repeat airstrikes like the one that apparently was aimed at Al-Qaeda but killed some civilians in a remote village, as officials sought to soothe public outrage over the attack. President General Pervez Musharraf assured visiting U.S. Undersecretary of State Nicholas Burns that Pakistan would not waver in its support for Washington's war on terrorism, but said such airstrikes must not be repeated. A foreign ministry official said the attack prompted nationwide protests calling for Musharraf's ousting. The Washington Note reports on developments at the World Bank since Wolfowitz's installation as its head. They say that in recent months, picking up steam in recent weeks, there's been a massive exodus of top talent from the World Bank. According to reports, the senior ethics officer at the bank has departed. Also on the exit roster are the vice president for East Asia and the Pacific, the chief legal counsel, the bank's top managing director, the director of institutional integrity, which monitors internal and external corruption, the vice president for environmentally and socially sustainable development, and the head of the Information Solutions Group. The Sydney Morning Herald reports that entertainer Harry Belafonte, one of the Bush administration's harshest critics, has compared the Homeland Security Department to the Nazi Gestapo and attacked the president as a liar. "We've come to this dark time in which the new Gestapo of Homeland Security lurks here, where citizens are having their rights suspended," Belafonte told the annual meeting of the Arts Presenters Members Conference. "You can be arrested and not charged. You can be arrested and have no right to counsel." Belafonte's remarks, part of a 45-minute speech on the role of the arts in a politically changing world, were greeted with a roaring standing ovation from an audience which included singer Peter Yarrow of the folk group Peter, Paul and Mary and members of the arts community from several dozen countries. This has been Fourth State Radio News. I'm Gail Thomas.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. More than 40 years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King told the world of his dream of racial equality. He stood in front of the Lincoln Memorial and said in bold and powerful language that people of color were sick of being second-class citizens and that they wouldn't rest until they were truly free. So how far have we come since then? Look, let's face a simple reality here. No legislation, no matter how well written, is going to wipe away hundreds of years of bigotry. It was almost a century after Jefferson wrote that all men were created equal that Lincoln legally freed the slaves, but 100 years after that, things were still so bad that there were riots in the streets. And anyone who thinks it's ended is wrong. Sure, the racists have to be more deceptive about spreading their hate, but the hate is still there. I'm not saying things are as bad as they were in 1963, but face it, we still have a long way to go. And here's the deal. Dr. King's speech was specifically about racial inequality in the United States, but if you read between the lines, you'll see he was speaking of something greater. Because his dream wasn't just about freeing one group of people in one country. It was about freeing all of us from the darker side of our nature. When we truly start to judge a person by the nature of their character, when we stop exploiting people for profit, when we stop killing each other over land or money or oil or religion, then we can finally say that we are free at last. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
This is Sansara Taylor. The world can't wait. drive out the Bush regime. On January 31st, Bush will give his State of the Union address. But we already know that the state of this union is a state of emergency. The Bush regime is out to remake the world. Endless war, an Orwellian police state, religious tyranny, no dissent, no critical thought, no right to abortion, a ruined planet. This regime is immoral. It's unjust, and it's indictably criminal. We must stop it. On Tuesday, January 31st, when Bush gives his State of the Union address, protest across the country demand Bush step down. The next Saturday, February 4th, join us in Washington, D.C. to bring our demand right to the White House. Bush lied. Bush spied. Bush must step down. Find us today. WorldCan'tWait.org, 866-973-4463.
Fourth Estate Radio.
Another edition of Fourth Estate Radio. My name's John Fox.
And this is Bruce Birch coming to you from the North American continent. John, how far away are you and how far into my future are you actually right now?
Still 16 hours last time I checked and about 10,000 miles approximately, depending on how you decide to fly. I tell you what, though, man, you know, the last show I was talking about the massive heat wave. Well, it was straight after that. All we did was get rained on, and thankfully, for the first time in about a year, we had rain, serious rain, fall in our aquifer catchment areas. So it's aside from some very strange things going on over here in Australia with politics and business and Iraq, it's been nice that we haven't been being fried by Mother Sun.
Well, that is a good thing. I immediately after we got off of the show last week, what I decided to do was go outside and do a Bruce Birch rain dance special.
Oh, did you really?
Yes, I did. I washed my car. And so I figured, you know, but I pointed it south. Actually, I pointed it sort of southwest.
Did you?
Thinking that if I pointed it my car that way, that, you know, maybe the rain would head that direction. And apparently, you know, it worked.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, and it stalled. I tell you, for a while, and this is actually the first sunny day we've had, and
well,
so...
Well, I haven't moved my car yet. okay, that was just stupid.
Anyway, before we get kicking into, you know, there's been so much news this week. As usual, we're blogging at fourthestateradio.com, and we're chatting at the Tom Hartman chat room, and that's tomhartman.com, however you want to spell it, and click the chat link, and of course...
Right on, Brother Tom.
Oh, yeah, right on, Brother Tom. I like the sound of that. You got anything to lead us off with, Bruce, or you want me to kick it in today?
I'm thinking, you know what, I'm thinking it's in your court today. How about that?
All right, man. Well, I got a couple of things, right? Okay.
All right.
Now, we all know about, you know, Abramoff and the lobbying scandal, right? Now.
Sure.
Now, as you would kind of hope, both sides have popped up with possible legislation to deal with lobbyists. Now, all this stuff is kind of just coming out as we're doing the show this week, so there may be more information available now. But here's the interesting thing: I have yet to really get a read of the Democrats' proposal as of yet. Okay, but here's the Republicans. Leave it to a Republican to, when faced with an obvious scandal, obvious involvement of you know, everybody. They find a way to weasel things. So check this out. Tell me how opposite world this is. Okay.
Lots.
Lawmakers are about this is about the Republican one. Lawmakers are about to bombard the American people with proposals that would crack down on lobbyists. Several prominent plans, including the one outlined by Dennis Hastert, would specifically ban meals and privately paid travel for lawmakers. Sounds great. But it continues, or would they? According to lobbyists and ethics experts, even if Hastert's proposal is enacted, members of Congress and their staffs would still travel the world on the interest group's expense and eat steak on the lobbyist's account in the priciest restaurants in Washington. Here, get this. The only requirement would be that whenever a lobbyist pays the bill, he or she must also hand the lawmaker a campaign contribution. Then the transaction will be legal.
Okay, so let me get this straight. What happens is if someone if a lobbyist wants to influence a legislator, all they need to do is take them out to dinner, hand them a campaign donation, and all is well.
Yeah, so the way this reads to me is this legislation is to stop the illegal paying off and influence of lobbyists on lawmakers. But to make the change legal, you have to legally pay a lawmaker by a lobbyist.
So essentially, you take the guy out to dinner, right? I mean, you know, you're taking him out just to talk to him, but in order to take him out to dinner and not have it be illegal, you have to also give him a bribe.
That's exactly what it says, as far as I can figure out.
Instead of just giving him a bribe, how does it work the opposite way? I mean, do you have to take him out to dinner?
I don't know, man. Maybe all you need is a movie. you reckon a blockbuster stub would work?
You know, I'm thinking it might. Or Hollywood Video, or.
Oh, absolutely, man. I think it's just absolutely atrocious. The whole thing.
As long as you're not renting Fahrenheit 9/11 or Bush's brain, you'll be okay.
Now, you know, but, if they actually had like honest people guiding them when they wrote this, you know, they'd be saying, you know, wait.
No, you're doing it all wrong.
Because I mean, it's obvious, you know, they've got this non-accountability thing and I cannot wait to see how far this whole thing with Abramoff goes. And what I find interesting is as we're recording this, an Osama tape shows up.
Yeah, good old Osama. You know, where has he been hiding? Last I heard, he was playing golf in New Mexico.
Is that what you heard?
Yeah, well, you know, he had two carts, one for his dialysis machine and the other one for the golf clubs. But but you know what? I'm thinking he's been dead for a couple of years.
Oh, I reckon they've gotten in trouble. You know, the terror alert level thing doesn't scare people anymore because they realized that it was being used as a political tool. So now, you know, the only thing that they've got left going, okay, go to the next tape in the Osama library. Let's try and scare the fools again. I'm sorry. It's such a blatant, obvious move. I woke up this morning.
Was that really your voice?
Yes, it was.
Wow, that was good. Anyway, I mean, it sounded just like an English-speaking Osama.
Hey, I live with one. Well, I live with an English person. Hey, that almost was really, really bad.
I'm going to
save me,
you.
Bruce. You got something to throw in?
Well, you know, speaking of graft and politicians and insanity, the latest on this whole Alito thing, and we're going to be talking about this a little bit later on in the show with our guest in We the People, but apparently Bill Frist has come out today, or come out this week, I should say, and said that he would not allow any time for speeches on the Senate floor until January the 25th, which happens to be a day after the Senate Judiciary Committee votes on Sammy the Squint Alito's nomination. Now, the normal practice of the majority leader is to give senators time to make floor speeches about the nominee. He is not going to allow them to do it. He is totally bypassing that part of the process, or I should say that part of the tradition. It's not necessarily written in stone that that's part of the process, but it has been a part of the tradition, and as a result, Senator Patrick Leahy gave a speech at Georgetown, and Ted Kennedy and Dick Durbin both gave speeches at one Kennedy at a think tank in Washington, and Durbin at Northwestern Law School, instead of speaking in the Senate chamber on the floor there.
This is again, man. We've talked about this before, you know. In this modern world of right wing modern right wing politics, or even just modern politics, you know, if you can't deal with the issue being espoused, the next step is to attack the person bringing the issue up, and if that doesn't work, you shut down the debate, which is a constant thing that I go off about, just the way that they've taken control of the language, which is a major issue that I've got. And this is all just part of the same thing. They take control of the language, and then here, just through their own overreaching of power and nobody standing up to these people, they will shut down the debate if it is not the debate that they want to have or a debate that they can control.
Well, exactly. And you said the key word. The key word is control. The key word is maintaining power. And the only way to maintain power in a sure form is to limit debate, is to completely squelch it. And what I'm seeing, Bill Frist is on his way out, by the way. I can't help but believe that this guy is going to go down for a number of different things. I know we're getting ahead into a break, but I also heard this week or read this week that Bill Frist and Tom DeLay had day traders in their offices.
Oh, I saw that.
And so, I mean, you know, the bottom line is these freaks are going down. They're going to go down one by one. It's not going to happen all at once, and we're not going to be dancing in the street, you know, for very long. But the bottom line is that they're going down because their own power is corrupting them, and they can't help themselves. They don't know how to lead, John. They have no clue as how to be leaders.
They don't.
They know how to suck money out of the economy. They know how to suck power. But they don't know how to lead.
Hey, man, they know greed. They don't know how to lead. And you know what? We're just, we got to go come up on this break. It's coming up on 18 past the hour. We'll see you after a couple messages here on Fourth Estate Radio.
Close your eyes. You cash in on stupidity and you still don't understand. You think you're free, but you can't see the blood that's on your hands. No.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin. No falafel. No oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday nights, 7 to 10.
Head on.
A Buzz Flash radio moment. Some of us disagree with the president. We think the Iraq War is a mess. We think vote suppression is a crime. We think tax cuts for the rich are a bad idea. We think business doesn't know best. And we think dissent is an American value. This country was born because people questioned authority. It's as American as apple pie.
For more information, visit BuzzFlash.com.
Hi, my name is Aaron. And I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found a small patch of plastic on my right shoulder.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Place your hand on your heart. Measure the beats. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's how long it takes to protect your child's life. 5 heartbeats. That's how long it takes to learn about the dangers of pesticides that could be found in your child's classroom. Asthma, lower IQ scores, and cancer have all been linked to prolonged exposure to these toxins. But if you knew there were toxin-free alternatives to pesticides, if you knew you had a voice regarding their use, if you knew you could take action that would make your child's classroom safe today, wouldn't you do something? In a heartbeat. Log on to earthshare.org today and find out how you can help. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
The hour, and you're with us on Fourth Estate Radio, chatting at TomHartman.com and blogging at FourthEstateRadio.com. And Bruce Birch, what was the next story you had lined up before we had to go?
Well, you know, I'm going to... thanks, John. And I love that song, man.
I love it.
This is great. But anyway, the next story that I want to talk about, if I can talk... is the fact that Evo Morales, who is set to become Bolivia's first Indian president, has made his first cabinet announcement, John. And guess what he's going to do?
What's he going to do?
He's going to scrap the Ministry for Indigenous People. What he's decided that he's going to do is... this is what's interesting to me, is that in a country where the majority of the people who live in the country are indigenous people... they would actually have a ministry for, like we have a Bureau of Indian Affairs. They have a ministry for indigenous people there. Okay?
Right.
Now, he's saying, now, he says, here, the indigenous people will be ministers.
Mm-hmm. Sounds right to me.
He says, someone said that when we Quechuas and Aymaras were in government, we'd make a ministry for white people, he says, but we won't discriminate.
I actually believe that to be true, to tell you the honest truth. And I know that this man, they're painting this whole situation in South and Central America with such a broad stroke, and trying to use old terminology, going back to, again, my whole argument always about taking control of the language and the discussion. Now, you're actually seeing here where they just want self-rule. And even, you know, unlike the United States, which now the native people are a complete minority, here you had the native people being ruled by a minority. And
well, this is same in South Africa.
But they themselves were still the absolute majority. And I actually, you know, there may be some, you know, there may be some wrongness here and there, but I think it'll be isolated. And I've read some of the stories coming from this guy, and he wants to start a two-way dialogue. No more of this America dictating to them. He wants to work hand in hand. There's the whole coca plant issue, which I'll get into another time, but he wants to deal with it because cocaine's not a problem for his people, it's a problem for the Americans.
Right.
And that the whole point is, again, actually having the discussion that needs to be had. And this is where I think that, to the horror of a whole bunch of America, South and Central America could end up being a huge example to us about getting back involved with your local and federal government and actually getting, you know, being we the people again.
Well, and that's just it. We got to get back to that. But I think it's fantastic that he's doing this, and you know, I see Evo Morales as being even more of a populist, if you will, than Chavez.
Oh yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out. But I'm behind him 100%. I think this guy's got his heart in the right place. At least he seems to.
Well, you're familiar with the young culture, older culture argument, you know, and I think this idea where, you know, okay, you have one's more of a populist, one's more of a socialist. However, they are not looking to dominate one another. They are looking to have a dialogue, because that dynamic is what keeps it all alive. And I think this is what you're seeing happen in what used to be the greatest tribal civilizations in the history of this planet, are starting to go ahead and get back to where it was. Yes, they were all different, but that wasn't something to fear. That was something to respect and deal with, whether you liked it or not sometimes. And I know that this is, you know, people will be going, oh, you know, John's gone off the deep end, but, you know, I'm hearing some really balanced dialogue coming from that end. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we don't have much time left at all, do we?
Well, I'll tell you what, man. Before we go out, when we get into, I'm not sure we're going to do this, whether it's going to be the Corporation Watch or the Axis of Iniquity, there is some major stuff going on down here in Australia, okay? I'll sum it up this way to give you a taste. Imagine all wheat exported out of a country was run by one government board. Okay, this is a fact I've just come to understand. Now imagine that same country's largest petroleum company had funneled money through a Jordanian trucking firm, $300 million behind the UN's back during oil for food.
Oh. So Saddam, it's we're back to we're heading back to Iraq.
Well, okay. We're going to get into this later, but just chew on that a little bit, that they went behind a humanitarian program to funnel $300 million to Saddam. We'll be back on Fourth State Radio.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll, supposedly they say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
A Buzzflash Radio Moment. During times of war, people like to feel that God is on their side. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I have to ask, which God is that? Which God supports war? If you're a Christian and you support a war, that's your choice, as it should be. You're endowed with a free will. But leave Christ out of it, all right? He never supported a war.
For more information, visit BuzzFlash.com.
Watched her mouth walk through the glass as the rain it flooded the underparts, and the light from the restaurant hit her face in a way made me wish that she would stay and make her brand in a little black river over poison, years and loves. Well, that I'm a simple man, but I know this much. Joy in a woman is as good as her touch. Joy in a woman is as good as her touch. I'm a bolted man, I'm a light and I'm a stone. Felt the heaviness, the guilt and the loneliness I withhold. No good woman can't change all in this hard world. Hello, high water, it's a pretty good start. Hello, high water, it's a pretty good start. Tomorrow rain won't wash this away, 'cause the sun won't rise. When you cut in the eye, came down this road with no.
Past the hour, and I'm just going to kick straight into this thing. Bruce, what do you say?
Kick it.
Okay, as I alluded before, there's a bit of a thing going on here down in Australia, okay? So I have a bunch of stories from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age here, and they're all available for you to peruse. So here's the basics. There's a plot, I'll take from the beginning, from the Sydney Morning Herald, the plot to grab money from the UN. Senior executives in Australia's wheat exporter, AWB, which is the Australian Wheat Board, arranged with officials from Saddam Hussein's regime to use the United Nations oil for food account to pay an Australian oil company millions of dollars owed to it by Iraq. Evidence of the deal involving the BHP joint venture partner Tigris Petroleum and AWB in a breach of UN sanctions on Iraq emerged in a series of damning internal memos at yesterday's inquiry into the scandal headed by Terence Cole QC. Now, basically what happened here is the Australian Wheat Board, which is the only exporter of wheat in Australia going out to the rest of the world, and there's a lot of it there, had a dispute with the Iraqis. There were metal shavings in a delivery of wheat. Now,
in order to weigh it down,
Everyone's posed that question. No one knows. Now, regardless of that fact, you now have a delivery that they will kind of want like credit for. They paid for it, right?
Sure.
Now, the way oil for food was working, there are two ways that you could do this legally. One was via credits on future purchases, so that there was no movement, no chance of further, you know, diversion of funds.
Right.
Or was to actually pay it through the UN's account. Now, over the past, I think it's 3 days, the head of the Australian Wheat Board, who seems to be a real bloody piece of work, has said nothing but, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. Now, it all came down to what they did was, instead of going through the UN, instead of just doing it as paid for credits, they used a Jordanian trucking firm to funnel the money back through inflated transport costs through the oil company BHP to pay off over $300 million directly into the coffers of Saddam Hussein, directly bilking a humanitarian program for food and medicine for the Iraqi people.
Wow. So that all that money was diverted, right?
All this money was diverted. This went straight into the coffers. Now, it wasn't as though that before this all happened, there weren't questions. Now, it seems as though, I do believe it's Alexander Downer, our foreign minister, was involved in a meeting where these payments were discussed. And not only that, the UN contacted the Australian government at one point. The date passes me at the moment, and said, hey, this thing that you're doing here, we think what you're planning to do here doesn't follow the rules. And the Howard government turned around to the UN and said, nah, we don't think he's a problem, and went ahead and did it. Now, If we're supposed to be trying to help these people, and I mean, we're talking, this goes back before we invaded, and you have Johnny Howard talking out the other side of his mouth while this stuff is going on. Now, there's been someone from Howard's government in the hearings all week waiting for something to break, where this guy finally cracks and makes some allusion towards involvement of the government. Now, the guy running this thing, Terence Cole, at one point, after like day two or three, he was so just over this guy saying, I don't know, I don't know. He actually asked him, he says, excuse me, sir, are you a complete fool? And his reply was, no, sir, I am not a complete fool. And this guy has a history. Get this. Okay, is it OSHA that's the American, workers' safety thing still?
Yes, it's Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Yes, OSHA.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, it's called Work Cover here, okay? And it's kind of handled by the individual states. Now, this guy who runs currently the Australian Wheat Board used to work for WorkCover in the state of Victoria. Now, while he was there, he was said to have been living a lifestyle that would make the 200 richest Australians blush. He spent over $100,000 of taxpayer money on international travel, hotel expenses, and dinners. He did another some $350,000 out of another account, and he constantly would never be held accountable for any of it, right? He seems to be one of these kind of bully types. And at the time, the current government down there was not in power, but the opposition guy, who is now the premier of the state of Victoria, a guy by the name of Mr. Brack, was constantly wanting this guy's head on a platter, saying, this guy is bilking you, right? And not only that, his department, which was worker safety and whatnot, was falling apart. As soon as Brack got into power, within a month, this jackass resigns, citing that he can't work with the current government. Well, funny that. Someone wanted to hold him accountable, and then when he leaves, he takes almost all of his staff straight to the Australian Wheat Board.
Where he can make the real money.
It's insane. I mean, all I can think of is you know, Butler's War is a Racket, man. You know? How can people sleep at night knowing that they're bilking some of the worst suffering people on the planet? You got to remember, when sanctions were going on, things weren't going real well for the Iraqi people, right? And so we had this whole program, and I'm glad that this is breaking here, because when they investigated it, when it came to the Americans, suddenly what weirdness went on there, suddenly all being oil buddies of George W. Bush's. Well, Australia being a slightly smaller country, and people that all you have to do is drive 30 minutes out of the city and you're in the farms, okay?
Right, right.
And the farmers have driven into Sydney, and they're like sitting there kind of with smiles on their faces, because they have been obviously being forced to probably sell their wheat at you know, reduced prices so that they could get into the export market. And you know, the fact that you talk about open markets and whatnot, but then probably one of the single largest accounts that the country could possibly have, which would, and it's a humanitarian effort, the fact that it's done by a pseudo-government monopoly, I didn't realize any of this stuff until now. And the guy's got a history, and he's just playing, as we've seen in America, that plausible deniability game. And this whole thing's just ripping open all week as we've gone on. And just to give you an idea what this guy's like, and this happened when I first moved into the country, it was 1998, and down in Victoria, a natural gas processing plant had a massive explosion, right? Knocked out hot water and all kinds of things, and electrical power plants and all kinds of stuff for a couple of weeks down outside Melbourne. Workers died, the whole mess, right? The reports come back. This is when he was working for the Occupational Health and Safety type board. They said lives could have been saved if there had been a disaster team permanently on site, 4 to 6 people, right? They said they now need to install one at every processing plant of this type in Australia. He basically threw the report out and disregarded it and told them all to get bent. So this is a guy who is obviously just another corporatist shill that doesn't care about, you know, it's that sociopathic corporate mindset. The dollar rules all, and screw the people. And we got about a minute and a half before we get out of here. I had to let people know about this because I know you won't hear about it. And I'm going to continue following this, because I haven't even had a chance to follow what connections BHP has with any of the American oil companies, that kind of thing. However, I'm hoping that the Australian fair go thing, that ethos, is going to come out and say, this is wrong. This is so wrong. And we're not going to stand for having these people that represent us doing this to innocent women and children, because they basically took the medicine and the food out of their hands and out of their mouths. And I'm really pissed off, man. You got about a minute. Why don't you take us out? It's coming up on 45 past the hour.
Well, thank you, John. But I think you've done an excellent job of researching that story. And, corruption is not something that's limited to the United States or to Australia or to anywhere. I mean, every one of our leaders is subject to being corrupted by their absolute power. And this is a perfect example of that. So thank you for bringing it to our attention. And we're going to be back here very, very shortly with more of Fourth Estate Radio.
This is Mark Crispin Miller. The world can't wait to drive out the Bush regime. On January 31st, Bush will give his State of the Union address, but we can say right now that the Union is in a state of emergency. The Bush regime is out to remake the world. An Orwellian police state, endless war, religious tyranny, no dissent, no free thought, a ruined planet. This regime is immoral, unjust, unelected, and indictably criminal. And we must stop it. On Tuesday, January 31st, during Bush's State of the Union address, we will mount protests all across the country. We will demand that Bush step down. Then, on Saturday, February 4th, join us in Washington, D.C., and we will bring our demand right to the White House. Bush lied. Bush spied. Bush must step down. Find us today, worldcantwait.org.
everybody. Welcome back. It's about 10 minutes before the hour. I've recovered, and here's Bruce.
All right. Thank you, John. John, you did an excellent job in that last segment, by the way. I was wondering, though, did you ever actually take a breath?
I was finding it hard, and in fact, I kind of felt my diaphragm slowly, like, rising, and I was running shorter and shorter of breath as we went on. It was just... But
it was great. Thank you very much. For that research. We need to hear stuff like that here in the U.S., especially because, you know, we just need to hear it. But anyway, we're into our occupation watch, and this week our total of American military casualties in Iraq that we're aware of is 2,222, and that would be 2,085 since our mission accomplished speech. On the Iraqi side, of course, over 100,000 have died in the course of this occupation. We bring you that number every week because I believe very strongly that we need to know, you know.
Yeah.
And if you pay attention to this show, you will get the count every week. Moving over into Iraq, you know, one of the things that has been prevalent over the last, you know, over the entire time that we've been there since we started bombing the damn place, is that they've not been able to have any reliable source of electricity. Now, lengthy power cuts over the last 2 weeks, primarily in the last 2 weeks now, and we're talking about December to January 2006. Okay?
That's insane.
Lengthy power cuts over the past 2 weeks due to insecurity and a decrease in oil production are seriously affecting the lives of Iraqis in the capital of Baghdad. With temperatures below 0 degrees centigrade, residents of the city are currently getting fewer than 8 hours of electricity per day, making them dependent on generators which require fuel that is both in short supply and prohibitively priced.
Oh, it's going so well over there, isn't it?
It's going smashingly well, John. Smashingly. Matter of fact, it's almost catastrophic, wouldn't you say?
My, what a magnificent catastrophe you got there. Is it yours?
Thank you, Boris.
I think Boris is onto something.
Yeah, I do believe so.
I think we need to drop that sound drop to George Bush. Mariam Hussein, no relation to Saddam, says, I can't afford a generator and can't buy food because my refrigerator is constantly subject to power cuts. We have less than 6 hours of power daily. The closure in December of a major oil refinery in the northern town of Bajai, say observers, made the situation considerably worse, including the number of daily power cuts in Baghdad. Khalid Allah, a senior official at the electricity ministry, blames the deteriorating security situation. The difficulties in guaranteeing security to our employees and the increase of demand for power during the winter season have caused a decrease in the production of power at our plants. So apparently this is not only merely being blamed on the fact that, they're decreasing oil in the wrong time of the year, but their employees are scared to go to work. I mean, it's the bottom line. And they're scared that what's going to happen is they're going to get to work, and somebody's going to come along with a suicide bombing situation or some sort of other industrial espionage type situation.
It's organized chaos. Again,
how close to civil war are they really? That's what I'd like.
Wasn't there just a report that came out that said flat out it is civil war?
I believe John Murtha. I believe John Murtha came out last week and even mentioned that. Driving that situation into a chaotic situation is the fact that we are now at serious odds with Iran, and apparently now Iran has warned that if sanctions are imposed over its nuclear program, that they will try to kick off a world oil crisis. And this is what their oil minister said. In case of sanctions, other countries will suffer as well as Iran. One of the consequences will be the unleashing of a crisis in the oil sector, and particularly a price hike. Iran happens to be the number two oil exporter in OPEC, with oil revenue last year of $42 billion. Okay? That's a lot of oil.
Have we not been seeing slowly the rising of the same saber rattling that happened before we went into Iraq? It feels like we weren't at war with Eurasia. We're now at war with your ASNIC. It's just like replacing the word, and it just feels like a bad rerun.
Well, it is a bad rerun, except for this country. I fully believe that in the case of Iran, my friend, that if we push them too far, they will react. We're not going to do a 2 week excursion into Baghdad. It ain't going to be like that at all.
And I think if it weren't for the saber rattling on the other end. You know, the hinting thing. I've been hearing, you know, some chatter on the talk shows and stuff about the fact that they've basically done this because we're making noise. You know, it's in response to. They would never have made this move if there hadn't been accusations made.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're bringing it on ourselves. If you ask me, I think what you're trying to say is we're playing with fire.
We absolutely are. Not only that, John, but you know, it's not just about playing with fire. It's about that we have people who are doing diplomacy in our government who have no clue as to what diplomacy really is. You know, if they did know, then they wouldn't be doing some of the things that they're doing. They would not be poking a giant with a stick. They would instead be trying to lull the sleeping giant. Don't poke him with a stick. I mean, that's just stupid.
It is stupid. But, man, we're just about out of time, and thanks for that. And we'll be back on the top of the next hour, and you're listening to Fourth Estate Radio.
Twin soldiers and Nixon coming. We're finally on our own. This summer I hear the drumming. For dead.
I love it when my president tells me to put food on my family. I just, you know, when he tells me to do that, I immediately, you know, we start having a food fight. So,
do you really?
It's great.
Do you and your
man.
Kids start throwing like Twinkies and stuff at each other?
No, more like, you know, mashed potatoes and stuff.
Oh,
and
right,
stuff
right.
Sticks,
pull on.
Sticks
oh, right
to the
on.
Wall, you know. But anyway, you know, and that should be a top story all by itself. You know, how did we elect such a moron?
We try to answer that and many more questions this week and last week on Fourth Estate Radio. I'm John Fox, one of your co-hosts. Bruce Birch will join me on Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, every week to try and strip the pants off the mainstream media. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Was good. Once. Planet Jack.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel. Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
State Radio News for the 21st of January 2006. I'm Gail Thomas. Rescuers on Saturday found the bodies of two miners who disappeared after a conveyor belt caught fire deep inside a coal mine, bringing to 14 the number of West Virginia miners killed on the job in less than a month. The bodies were found in an area of the mine where rescue teams had been battling the intense blaze for more than 40 hours. Rescuers could not enter that portion of the mine until the flames had been mostly extinguished and the tunnels cooled down. "We have found the two miners we were looking for," said Doug Conaway, director of the State Office of Miners' Health, Training and Safety. "Unfortunately, we don't have a positive outcome." The miners became separated Thursday evening as their 12-member crew tried to escape a conveyor belt fire at Arakoma Coal's Alma No. 1 mine in Melville, about 60 miles southwest of Charleston. The rest of the crew and nine other miners working in a different section of the mine escaped unharmed. AP reports that Pakistan's president told a senior American official Saturday the United States must not repeat airstrikes like the one that apparently was aimed at Al-Qaeda but killed some civilians in a remote village, as officials sought to soothe public outrage over the attack. President General Pervez Musharraf assured visiting U.S. Undersecretary of State Nicholas Burns that Pakistan would not waver in its support for Washington's war on terrorism, but said such airstrikes must not be repeated. A foreign ministry official said the attack prompted nationwide protests calling for Musharraf's ousting. The Washington Note reports on developments at the World Bank since Wolfowitz's installation as its head. They say that in recent months, picking up steam in recent weeks, there's been a massive exodus of top talent from the World Bank. According to reports, the senior ethics officer at the bank has departed. Also on the exit roster are the vice president for East Asia and the Pacific, the chief legal counsel, the bank's top managing director, the director of institutional integrity, which monitors internal and external corruption, the vice president for environmentally and socially sustainable development, and the head of the Information Solutions Group. The Sydney Morning Herald reports that entertainer Harry Belafonte, one of the Bush administration's harshest critics, has compared the Homeland Security Department to the Nazi Gestapo and attacked the president as a liar. "We've come to this dark time in which the new Gestapo of Homeland Security lurks here, where citizens are having their rights suspended," Belafonte told the annual meeting of the Arts Presenters Members Conference. "You can be arrested and not charged. You can be arrested and have no right to counsel." Belafonte's remarks, part of a 45-minute speech on the role of the arts in a politically changing world, were greeted with a roaring standing ovation from an audience which included singer Peter Yarrow of the folk group Peter, Paul and Mary and members of the arts community from several dozen countries. This has been Fourth State Radio News. I'm Gail Thomas.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. The most memorable part of Al Gore's recent speech to this observer was the part where he told congressmen and senators of both parties to stop acting like wimps and stand up to this administration. And he's absolutely right. Of course, I'm not really surprised that Republican congressmen and senators are letting Bush get away with his criminal activity. It's been my opinion for years now that Republicans are Republicans first and Americans when it's convenient. For me, the biggest wimps are those Fox Democrats, people like Joe Lieberman and Joe Biden and lunatics like Zell Miller, who go on TV and tell the Democrats to show loyalty to a president who's done nothing but lie to them and repay cooperation with backstabbing. I hear Lieberman has a serious primary challenger now in Ned Lamont, and I hope he gives Joe Mentum a run for his money. If we're ever going to take power away from Republicans, we need to stop acting like them. And the first step is to get rid of these appeasers and apologists. Frankly, I don't understand why we didn't just kick these people out of the party years ago. If you want to be a Republican, just switch parties. If you want to be a Democrat, then get with the program. Too many of us have lost our jobs, our pensions, and in some cases our lives because the Republicans don't care about anyone but themselves and the Democrats have been too afraid to fight back. Enough is enough. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
This is Samsara Taylor with The World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime. As the world is threatened with a darkness so great that villages shook, houses collapsed, Torture dungeons are built and photos are snapped. Where are you? As abortion is criminalized and women are shamed, as gays are demonized and immigrants are blamed, and the president lied and spied, where are you? As science is pulled under and religion is made law, as New Orleans is abandoned and the polar ice caps thaw, where are you? History is turning. We either get Bush's future or a future we fight for and forge ourselves. You are needed now. Tuesday, January 31st, during Bush's State of the Union address, protests across the country, we demand Bush step down. Then Saturday, February 4th, get to Washington, D.C. Bush lied. Bush spied. Bush stepped down. Find us today. WorldCan'tWait.org. 866-973-4463.
Fourth Estate Radio.
Back to Fourth Estate Radio at the top of the second hour, and that means it's time for We the People and Bruce Birch, who is our guest this week.
Well, John, I'm glad you asked me. Our guest this week is Mary, mother of four from Pittsburgh, who was actually originally on our show. Actually, she was originally on our very first show back in, I don't know, November of 2005 or something like that, right, John?
Yes, I do believe. How you doing, Mary?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Well, you know, I think I'm doing okay. John, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, it seems.
We've had a bit of a time tonight with technology, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Mary, one of the major reasons that I thought of getting you back on the show this week is with all of the things that are going on with Alito. I know how active you are in trying to motivate people and get them going to help make political change, and with all the stuff that's going on with Alito, you know, I'd like to get your perspective on, you know, what's the next step. Now, it doesn't look like he's going to be filibustered, but maybe that could still happen. What do you think about that?
Well, Bruce, I just got done. I got home tonight from taking care of the family and running errands and logged on and looked at some articles, and all I can say is, you know, holy cow. I mean, it's one challenge after another. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a legislator. I'm trying to figure out this whole filibuster situation. And apparently the Democrats are feeling, and most of the country, I guess, who are reading about this issue or listening, following the situation, that Alito is going to be confirmed. And from what I can tell, back in May, seven Democrats and seven Republicans got together and came to an agreement that, from what I can tell, that they would allow three of Bush's appointees to go through without filibustering, but at that point, it's up for grabs. So it appears, I mean, I don't know how many votes are necessary to require a filibuster, but here's my take on things. Randy Rhodes said the other day that the Democrats managed to get a week extension on the vote for Alito, and during that week's time, it's up to us to pick up the phone and call our senators and voice our concerns. So yesterday morning, I woke up and found a website that listed all of the senators, their phone numbers, and I called 47 senators. It took about an hour and a half. It didn't take that much time. I called their offices and basically said, look, I would really like you to let the senator know. I would wish that he vote no to confirm Alito to the Supreme Court. Even if it were a lost cause, here's what it looks like is happening today. This was dated Thursday the 19th, that three senators said today, and this would be Leahy, Kennedy, and Durbin, that even if Alito is pushed through as the next Supreme Court justice, they want this vote to go on record. They want to hold Bush and the Republicans accountable for this guy and any decisions that he makes, so that for the next elections in 06, they can hold them accountable. But in the meantime, this show's going to air Saturday night. We're recording this Thursday night. Folks still have Monday to pick up the telephone and call their local senators, even if they're Republicans, and there are a couple of Democratic senators that people seem to be really focused on right now as well. It'll take folks 15 minutes. But if people do this collectively, it can make a big difference.
Well, Mary, my question is, what are the Democrats doing making deals like this? And I think you're absolutely right that Monday, I think people need to get on and do exactly what you've done, which just blows my mind. Get on the email, everything, call every radio show host you know, because I mean, why is the dialogue being hijacked? This is my huge question, and I'm glad that you do have these Democrats wanting to get their vote on record to say, we didn't back this and we're not into this. I like the accountability aspect.
Well, here's another thing that we were talking about, a couple of thoughts just went through my mind. One of them is, I think that the fact remains is that Bush has another 2.5 years in office. I don't know how many Supreme Court justices may retire or die or whatever. I don't know how many opportunities Bush is going to have to appoint more justices. I haven't done the research yet. But if the Democrats were to oppose this guy Alito and block his confirmation, there's going to be another Bush appointee or nominee and another one and another one. So maybe it's a time game. I don't know. But in terms of opposing him, when I called yesterday, it was really fun to have a couple of impromptu chats with aides in different offices, and probably the most candid one I had was with an aide in Senator Kennedy's office. And naively I asked him, because since I'm dealing with kids in a business, I've watched some of the hearings, I can't follow every moment of what's going on. Has Kennedy taken a public stand on Alito? He said, no, he has not yet, but he's made some very strong statements. And I asked him, have you guys been getting a lot of phone calls about this as opposed to other issues? Oh, yeah, the phones have really been ringing. The other interesting thing is when you call these senators, some just say, thank you, I'll pass this along. Some say, thank you. Some ask you for your zip code. Some ask you for your name and your zip code. And what I would say to folks is what I learned after this exercise is two things. Don't just say vote no on Alito. If you're going to take the time to call these folks, have a short list of issues. Rattle off 3 or 4 points, and then tell them your name and your zip code and your address, because you want to know that your time that you're taking is being recorded.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you brought that up. What kinds of bullet points could someone give to a prospective senator or senator's aide that they're talking to?
Oh, man, where do you start? Well, okay, you've got illegal wiretapping. You've got voter fraud. You've got the Alito case. You've got the Downing Street memos, twisting intelligence for war. But here's the thing. I mean, most of the time the people I got on the phone sounded like they were about 21 years old, okay? So if you come off as sounding like an extremist, who knows where your message is going to get? I mean, I don't know the fine arts of calling your senators and your representatives. I mean, I think on some level you have to sort of judge, okay, for instance, I spent more time on the phone with my Senator Santorum's office, inspector's office, whereas when I'm calling a senator's office in Wyoming or Illinois, I'm not going to keep them on the phone. I just want to register my vote. But I think you just kind of have to play it by ear. But there are some, if you Google, I know that, Bruce, you know off the top of your head some great websites, senator.gov or whatever.
Yeah.
You can come up with a really handy list. And in my case, I just dialed the long-distance numbers because I got right through, and I have long-distance on my telephone.
Sure.
I got right through to an individual. And some of the folks asked, do you have anything else you'd like to say? But basically, the fact that they were able to answer the phone right away, to me, was a very empowering feeling. It made me feel like our votes might be stolen. This phone call might not be logged. But hey, here at least this is something I feel like I can do today, and maybe this is going to make a difference. And that was a great feeling.
Well, I think that's all great. And going back to what you're saying about Senator Kennedy, I think because his performance during the hearings have been one of the most impressive things. You know, I love the whole thing. You know, you can't tell me what I got. He goes, yes, I can. I sent it to you. You want it? I got it right here. You know, I think he is playing. He wants to keep the dialogue open, trying to continue to have the dialogue, hoping that maybe some of his peers will end up growing their spines back, regardless of whatever deal has been made, and oppose this guy, because if you have the dialogue, you don't have to go down to you know, stolen elections or anything with this. You just have to talk about the fact that Alito has never sided with the little guy, has always gone with big government, likes the idea of a president that overreaches on his power, and I think that's more than enough to say that this guy doesn't qualify to be a Supreme Court justice.
Actually, I mean, I was a little intimidated before I made that first phone call. I took a deep breath and I thought, oh man, because it was early in the morning, do I have the energy to do this? And the first phone call I made was actually to, unfortunately, to Senator Santorum's office. And within a few minutes of talking to his secretary, she had me fired up enough. I rubbed my hands together and I said, okay, next. But basically, most of the folks who answer the phone just—they don't ask any questions. You just say, "Look, I'm calling to ask that the senator vote not to confirm Alito for the Supreme Court." You hang up. You move on to the next one. So, I believe that if these people are sitting there on the phone, some of them said there's a tally, there's a list. People said folks are calling from both
sides. Okay, hold that thought, Mary. We got to take a break. We'll be right back here on Fourth Estate Radio.
Pays with his soul for some crime he did not commit. We think we're safe at home with our bumper stickers saying, just say no. We give up a few freedoms here and there in the name of a squeaky clean America. Now they've got us hypnotized and hysterical. Screaming for blood and justice. Now they've got us hypnotized and hysterical. Screaming for blood and justice. They show us the faces of hatred over and over. A new one every week. Could be Manuel Noriega. Could be the Ayatollah. Any old scapegoat will do. The young man will be our sacrificial.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no Oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday nights, 7 to 10.
Head on.
Hello, Mrs. Johnson. Let's see, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hello.
And as you know, he's African-American like you, so you can trust him.
And that's important, because here's the low monthly payment and interest rate you were promised, and here's where it triples. Plus, we buried a balloon payment in there, so you'll need another loan just to pay that off.
Another loan?
But we'll keep giving you loans.
Until we eventually take all the equity you had in your house, leaving you with absolutely nothing.
What? But don't worry, we're going to sell you credit life insurance. You don't really need it, but we sell it at 5 times the cost.
Which puts a ton of cash in our pockets.
Wait, whoa. Don't get up. You look nervous.
Ooh, we better hurry up and get you to sign. Or if you don't, I can pretend to ruin your credit with one phone call.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot.
Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Member of the company family, like your employee ID badge. Your ID badge allows you admittance to secure, high-level areas such as programming or bun preparation. Given only to trusted employees, it ensures no non-employee or riffraff, such as panhandlers or marketing persons, ever set foot onto company property. Your ID badge shows that you actually do have a name and perhaps a face, and you're not just some anonymous cog in the great, empty, hope-sapping, soul-crushing industrial abyss. And what a face! Why, that photo on your ID badge is almost as flattering as the one on your driver's license. Laminated and often hung on a chained noose around the neck, you'll be flashing it for years and years and years and years. Proudly flashing your ID badge.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together.
I'm thinking I'm made of Eve. Perhaps not Adams. This is Bruce Bircher back with Fourth Estate Radio, and it's about 22 minutes after the hour. We're in our second half of the We the People segment. And Mary, mother of four from Pittsburgh, PA, is still with us on the line. Mary, how you doing?
I'm still awake. How are you?
Well, I'm glad you are. Well, I'm doing great. And we're going to get right back into this topic because we want to get a bunch of information out there to folks pretty quickly about how to contact their senators and some of the things to talk about. One of the websites is you can go to savethecourt.org. That's save, S-A-V-E, thecourt.org, and that's put out by the People for the American Way. And there you can do a little drop-down thing where it says look up your U.S. senators, and it gives you all their contact information there and some other fact sheets on Alito, Sammy the Squint, as it were.
So, and there are, as you listen to this, a collection of links to help get you started for who to contact, and maybe even we have a list of the particular senators that maybe need some focusing on.
Motivating, as it were.
Yes.
Right. Now, folks don't have to take an hour and a half to do this. I mean, basically, people are going to have Monday, because the vote is scheduled for Tuesday. So if you can find 15 minutes in your day on Monday to make, just, you know, set your sights on making four phone calls, I mean, times however many people, and email your friends with those phone numbers, this kind of thing really can grow exponentially. And I really think that the senators, from what I heard when I called, They are getting a sense. And here's one other real quick tidbit. I asked one of the aides, is it true that letters mean the most, phone calls gain the second amount of attention, and emails the third? And they said, no, actually, letters, because of the security clearances, now take a while to get there.
Mm-hmm, right.
And they weigh any communication the same. So pick up the phone, you know, just make a real quick phone call, use the 800 number or whatever, because what the senators are trying to do now is they're trying to make a symbolic vote. And if they sense that enough people out there care enough about this, or at the very least that we're watching them, you know, you can't really easily call up and say, everyone pull out of Iraq. That's a little bit general, but right now here's a very focused thing that people can do.
What about, you know, and I know we were talking about focusing on some senators. Are there any particular senators that are sort of like sitting on the fence that need to be focused on particularly?
Well, I have a couple of names here from 3 or 4 days ago, and this is Thursday. I'm sure that might change by Saturday, and we'll have that updated, I think, John, right?
Yes, that's no worries.
Right, but the names that were being thrown out a few days ago were Ben Nelson from Nebraska. Okay. These are all Democrats, believe it or not. Biden, hopefully not, from Delaware. Mary Landrieu from Louisiana. Pryor from Arkansas. Lincoln from Arkansas. And when I was making my phone calls, there were a few phone numbers that were particularly busy. One was Hillary Clinton. One I never got through to was Dianne Feinstein. Her phone must be ringing off the hook. And I'm not sure what that means, but we'll have all this updated by Saturday.
Yeah. And something I would like to mention, too, is it's possible. I mean, I would not just focus on Democrats. I mean, Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island and Olympia Snowe from Maine. And there's a couple, two or three Republican senators that are kind of...
Ron Wyden from Oregon.
Ron Wyden, that are pro-choice, and they need to have a little bit of motivation to, you know, get them to do the right thing.
And we should all pound on Bill Nelson from Florida, another Democrat who I said, I'm voting for Alito. So I think we should just give him a hard time for that.
I mean, that is up. Okay. And I want to get off into a rant, so...
And no matter what we do, the list will probably be incomplete. So here's where I put a little bit of a challenge out to our listeners. You can go to our blog and add anything that's been missed and tell us who you've contacted. Maybe we can even make more of a record and show just exactly how many people disapprove of deal-making when very possibly, you know, the heart of our democracy could very well be at stake with this guy. And I think by doing Roberts first as Chief Justice, it may have been a very, very clever bit of red herring routine. Because
yeah, straw man, yeah.
Yeah, and because I actually, you know, just going by this guy's voting record, I can't trust him. So we're going to wrap this up here. And Mary, thank you so much for joining us again on the show. It's been great having you.
Oh, thanks so much, guys. It was a lot of fun.
We'll have you on again, that's for sure. And so let us know who you've contacted, who you think we should contact. Give us your ideas, your thoughts. You don't even have to sign up. You stick an email address in. That's at fourthestateradio.com. Just you'll see as much stuff as we've been able to get together, and let's hammer them on Monday. That's all I can say. Let's hammer them all on Monday and make sure that the voice of people is at least on the record by the time we go into 2006. So, Bruce, Mary, this has been really, really, really great. So we're going to be back in just a few minutes after, some adverts on Fourth Estate Radio.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Some kind of way out of here. There's a joker to the feast. Too much confusion, and I can't get no relief. Businessmen, they drink my wine, plow and dig my earth. None of them alone.
project.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charis Ford, founder of Grasoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told me that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns could be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
grasoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
What? You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Oh no, why did we have to go? Bush keeps on lying. Children keep on dying. Please, please, can't we pack and leave? Merck ain't no savior. 43's a failure. Bush died, soldiers died, the heart of America broke inside. Whoever dreamed it could be so bad? He's the worst president we ever had. Get out of Iraq.
But we have joined together today with thousands of our fellow citizens, Democrats and Republicans alike, to express our shared concern that America's Constitution is in grave danger. In spite of our differences over ideology and politics, we are in strong agreement that the American values we hold most dear have been placed at serious risk by the unprecedented claims of the administration to a truly breathtaking expansion of executive power.
Welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio, everyone. It's coming up on 36 past the hour. And, of course, that was former Vice President Al Gore this week in a speech before a bipartisan audience, Bruce. The hair standing up on my arms at the moment, actually.
Well, you know, John, I actually watched it when he gave that speech, and I was completely blown away by not only the subject matter, but by the way he delivered it. Now, you know, it's one thing for a gentleman such as he to get up and give a fiery political speech, because he's done that before. But this is a man who says he's not running for office. This is a man who says that he's done with politics, and he calls himself a recovering politician who is done with the political landscape, who now sees his mission as saving the United States Constitution. But the funny thing, and I guess it's really not a funny thing, but one thing that happened as a result, you know, this could not go unanswered.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Immediately, you can tell, I mean, if this administration is famous for swift boating. You know, we have come up with a whole brand new verb that didn't exist prior to this presidency called swift boating. And swift boating is basically, instead of attacking someone's ideas, you impugn their character.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Call them a child molester. It usually seems to be the first one that pops up.
Well, now, you know, Puffy McMoonface, in other words, Scotty McClellan, got up there and he said something along the lines of, oh, you know, this is just Al Gore out there trying to seek attention again.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
Would have been my reply.
Yeah, that's what would have been my reply to Puffy McMoonface. You know, and actually, I think we need to get Samuel L. Jackson on our show sometime. But anyway, what I'd like to do is just for a moment sort of go over the timeline of what happened. But you know, McClellan said that Gore got up there and said, oh, he was just seeking attention. But in reality, we haven't heard anything out of Gore for almost five years. I mean, very little.
There was that one speech last year where he kind of seemed like it was in New York University or something, vaguely,
yeah.
I remember. But it was another one where he suddenly saw a slightly different Al Gore than I remember than when he was vice president. And if you give me a second, I in the chat room when all this was kind of coming down, right, when we were all talking to all of our webhead friends.
Sure.
You know, people were typing in going, I can't believe it seems like he's gone so left. And I actually don't think that that's exactly the case, because I've said time and time again, I think all the arguments are skewed heavily to the right. And I actually think that he's always been very left in the idea that he's been very environmental, he's very balanced, he's a well-thought guy, right?
I would venture to say, John, on that very topic, that Al Gore is probably closer to what a real liberal is than
exactly
Bill Clinton ever dreamed of being.
And,
so.
I think, you know, the political atmosphere at the time, you know, he was riding out the eight, you know, reasonable years of Clinton and everything, that he was, you know, kind of tailoring his persona slightly, but still going on about the business of what he thought was actually probably good for the country. And we do know that he was going to go after the corporate payola on the environment, and he was going to go after this cronyism and whatnot, and he was going to do some – he was pretty clear when he ran in 2000. And I reckon that you have a man that's already had the presidency stolen from him when it was his endeavor. And now because of what happened, the country is in real trouble. And I think he's actually doing it like – I don't know if he's testing the waters possibly for running again, but if not that, he's at least standing up and saying, because they've already done everything they can do to this man. He has absolutely nothing left to lose except for them taking him physically off the planet. Okay?
Right.
And so
right.
I think he's now not doing it for his own political objectives anymore. I think it's purely because the country needs him, and who else could come up from out of the fray in Washington and everything else and lay out the case so beautifully. And I still am amazed at the amount Gail and I, when we watched the replay, were just amazed at the ground that the man covered and made it make sense. It was incredible. It's kind of like I'd love to just burn that to a disc and give it to every right winger that doesn't get it. Because I think all this stuff that we constantly talk about, he summed it, and he said, you know, we need an open investigation and follow the evidence wherever it may lead.
Well, and I think, you know, John, you've hit the nail on the head that we in America today absolutely need someone to rise up and to give voice to the people, you know, who aren't being heard by the, you know, those guys in Washington, man. We could have a million people in the streets of Washington, D.C. to protest everything that they do up there. They don't give a good goddamn what we think, my friend. What they have an agenda. They have a program. And in that program, they are going to accomplish every single bit of it until they are physically stopped by the rule of law. But the problem is that they're not stopping at the rule of law. What they're doing is they're trampling all over it. And that is exactly what Al Gore was saying. Now, you know, what we need to do as citizens is to back up his words, and we need to take to the streets in the way that he, you know, talked about doing. Now, we don't have that clip, I don't think, but there's another part of this speech where he actually says that, where he says we need to take to the streets, if necessary, to take back this republic.
Well, I don't think that I have that clip ready, but I actually have, just continuing on from where he was, and let's see if we can get this in here. Here we go. Coming up, yeah.
As we begin this new year, the executive branch of our government has been caught eavesdropping on huge numbers of American citizens and has brazenly declared that it has the unilateral right to continue without regard to the established law enacted by Congress precisely to prevent such abuses. It is imperative that respect for the rule of law be restored in our country.
Absolutely.
And
listen
to
the bipartisan crowd.
To come here to Constitution Hall to sound an alarm and call upon our fellow citizens to put aside partisan differences insofar as it is possible to do so, and join with us in demanding that our Constitution be defended and preserved.
Thank you, Al Gore. That's
all I can say. You know, that gives me flutters. But, you know, and the reason why it gives me flutters, John, is because defending the Constitution may very well mean a lot of things, okay? It very well may, you know, that Constitution that is enshrined in Washington, D.C., the ink on that paper is the blood of people who have defended this country.
And it's not, okay? And it's no GD piece of paper to me. I'm sorry. It's, you know, it's all the people have at this point, and they're really close to tearing the damn thing to shreds.
You know, they're trampling on it, but you know what? We're going to pick it up off the ground, and we're going to dust it off, and we're going to show those folks eventually exactly what it means to be an American. It does not mean that this unitary executive theory that this president has put into place in the White House about expanding the powers of the executive branch.
Yeah.
I mean, that is completely insane. And as a matter of fact, you know, they really tried to swift boat Gore. And I do have a statement here that he actually released that I want to read, if
okay.
I can.
You got time.
He says, "The administration's response to my speech illustrates perfectly the need for a special counsel to review the legality of the NSA wiretapping program. The Attorney General is making a political defense of the president without even addressing the substantive legal questions that have so troubled millions of Americans in both political parties. There are two problems with the Attorney General's effort to focus attention on the past instead of the present administration's behavior. First, as others have thoroughly documented, his charges are factually wrong. Both before and after the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act was amended in 1995, the Clinton-Gore administration complied fully and completely with the terms of the law. Secondly, the Attorney General's attempt to cite a previous administration's activity as precedent for theirs, even though factually wrong, ironically demonstrates another reason why we must be so vigilant about their brazen disregard for the law. If unchecked, their behavior would serve as a precedent to encourage future presidents to claim these same powers, which many legal experts of both parties believe are clearly illegal. The issue, simply put, is that for more than 4 years, the executive branch has been wiretapping many thousands of American citizens without warrants, in direct contradiction of American law. It is clearly wrong and disrespectful to the American people to allow a close political associate of the president to be in charge of reviewing serious charges against him."
I tell you what, I hope that this fires up the left, the middle, and the right. Let's see what's going on. And we're going to be back to wrap it up on Fourth Estate Radio.
This is Mark Crispin Miller. The world can't wait to drive out the Bush regime. On January 31st, Bush gives his State of the Union address. But we can say right now that this union is in a state of emergency. The Bush regime is not conservative. The Bush regime is not American. The Bush regime is radically opposed to the ideals on which America was founded. Reason, free speech, democracy, and the pursuit of happiness. The Bush regime wants to replace all that with corporate domination and religious tyranny. They want a vast police state where there is no argument, no private pleasure, no free thought, not a single tree left standing. This regime is immoral, unjust, unelected, and indictably criminal, and we must stop it. Tuesday, January 31st, during Bush's State of the Union address, we will protest all across the country and demand that Bush step down. The next Saturday, February 4th, join us in Washington, D.C. D.C., where we'll bring our demands right to the White House. Bush lied, Bush spied, Bush stepped down. Find us today, worldcantwait.org, 866-973-4463.
This is Bruce Birch, and this is Bruce's Bruising. This week's Full Metal Jacketed verbal barrage is aimed squarely at those in the Bush administration who continue to create an alternate reality when reality does not suit their needs. Former Vice President Al Gore, who delivered a blistering speech this past Monday in defense of what makes America what it is, our Constitution, nailed it. He laid out, historically and relevantly, a case for a country in crisis. He delivered a passionate speech that can be accurately described as coming directly from the writings of our founding fathers, a speech that awakened the passions of liberty and freedom from governmental intrusion, a speech that spoke to the very core of our nation's founding ideals. And in its typical fashion, the Bush administration could not address the issues in a realistic and forthcoming way. Its insistence that it is acting within the law is not just a falsehood, it is, as they say in Southside, Virginia, where I'm from, a bald-faced lie. Vice President Gore has no axe to grind. He calls himself a recovering politician. He isn't planning to run for office, and though many would like for him to, he hasn't even been very visible of late. But the first attacks on his character came in the form of Scott McClellan, press secretary, saying Gore was grandstanding for media coverage and that Gore was a hypocrite. The sad thing is that the Bush administration is not even trying anymore. Their sad shtick of swift voting is no longer working. The people aren't buying.
They, after all, want a government that is of, by, and for the people, not one that is of, by, afraid of, and against the people. This is Bruce Birch for Fourth Estate Radio.
Welcome back to the final segment of this edition of Fourth Estate Radio. It's about 7 minutes before the hour. And Brucey, I think we got to do some credits here, don't we?
We do indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, you can reach our archive at White Rose Society. We're actually on whiterosesociety.org. That is an archiving service and streaming service run by Ben Birch. And Ben, although no relation to me, is also another fine liberal who is working really hard to make sure that progressives don't feel so alone out there, and is helping to build a sense of community. So
and
thank you very much, Ben, for what you're doing for us.
5 million hours of progressive radio, and he never sends a bill. So if you have
$5,
throw it his way.
I found out the other day that if you were to actually sit down and listen to that all the way through, you would have had to have been born in the 1400s.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, somebody did the math the other day. I think it was Joni in the chat room. So props to Joni for figuring that one out. But it's you'd be 500 years old, I think, something like that. So
wow.
There's no way you could possibly listen to it all. But if you go there, you can listen to the most latest stuff and the most recent stuff. Another props is to Tom Hartman for the use of his chat room.
Absolutely.
Tom,
hello, everyone.
Thank you so very much.
And
to Bob Kincaid for running our promos, man.
Yeah, and
Bob's show is fantastic. You got to check his show out, man.
He's been rocking all week long. I mean, you know, I know he usually only has one prayer edition a week, but I reckon he was on the soapbox a few times this week, and it was a beautiful thing to hear. Everybody, remember this whole thing with Sammy the Snake. We gotta hammer all our representatives. As you know, whether you can spare 10 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, go to our website. We'll have a bunch of links for you to jump off of. You're all smart people. You'll find your way. Contact them all on Monday and say, we don't care about whatever deals you made. This guy is not right for democracy, and we need to block him. And if it takes a filibuster, pull the pants up, guys, and let's filibuster. It's all we have left.
Yeah, because if this guy gets on the court, the fact that we have a president who is illegally wiretapping isn't going to make a damn, because any case that goes will end up in that court, and he will approve whatever the government did.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, this is our last line of defense.
It'll throw the whole thing so far away from us. I mean, if this is where we finally take back control of the conversation, not control of it, but actually get back to the actual conversations that need to be had, as opposed to talking points and red herring issues and gays marrying and all this other stuff, and start getting down to the fact that we have a group of people that have bankrupted the American economy. The Chinese are about to drop the dollar and has sold all your jobs overseas. I think we need to get
Save
to the heart
court.
Of it.
Savethecourt.org. Savethecourt.org. Check it out. Last but not least, John, all things reconsidered tomorrow night.
Yeah, what are you doing tomorrow?
I have no idea.
But you're doing a
but
lot
you know
of it,
what?
Aren't you?
But I'm going to do a lot of it. Yes, it's going to be a 3-hour show, as will the week after as well. So, you know, we'll do some phone calls. We'll talk about some news items. We'll, you know, maybe we'll even dance in hula skirts. I'm not really sure yet. But.
Message from the front, sir.
Oh, I'm sick of messages from the front. Don't we ever get a message from the side?
And there you go. Just accent. Don't forget all things reconsidered. I had to play that. I'm sorry.
All
I had to play
reconsidered.
That.
Allthingsreconsidered.org. Go check it out, folks.
Right on, everybody. Thank you for being with us again this week. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRiseSociety.org. You're coming. Leave your comments. Tell us who you contacted. Leave your comments on the blog, fourthestateradio.com. We're going to see you next week, and we're working on some really, really, really big things in the future. And a bit of it is, you know, I'm going to be working on this Australian corruption story. I think it's going to break huge. We've got some other stuff that we can't really talk about yet, but wow, it's looking good. So, Bruce, say good day, Bruce.
Good day, Bruce.
Right on. We're out of here. We'll see you next week. I'm John. He's Bruce. We're Fourth Estate Radio. Come and visit us at fourthestateradio.com. We're out of here. Good night, Bruce.
Good night, John.
Take that to heart now, people.
Well, goodbye. And don't think it hasn't been a little slice of heaven, because it hasn't.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin. No falafel, no oxycontin, just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day, head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night, headonradio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday nights, 7 to 10.
Head on.
You know, I love it when my president tells me to put food on my family. I just, you know, when he tells me to do that, I immediately, you know, we start having a food fight. So,
do you really?
It's great,
you and your
man.
Kids start throwing like Twinkies and stuff at each other?
No, more like, you know, mashed potatoes and stuff.
Oh,
and
right,
stuff
right.
Sticks,
pull on.
Sticks
oh, right
to the
on.
Wall, you know. But anyway, you know. And that should be a top story all by itself. You know, how did we elect such a moron?
We try to answer that and many more questions this week and last week on Fourth Estate Radio. I'm John Fox, one of your co-hosts. Bruce Birch will join me on Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, every week to try and strip the pants off the mainstream media. That's FourthEstateRadio.com.